modest, but at least I want to pursue something here. Walk us through something that I think is has been, at least for a good couple of decades, a prevailing way of thinking or a line of reasoning that, as I'll say toward the end, is actually starting to change, but that still doesn't mean we shouldn't know something about it. I'm just gonna move right through into this with definitions, because it is often wise to start by defining some terms. Always a good plan. So, these are key terms that we will talk about, and terms that you no doubt already are well aware of, but even terms used a lot, sometimes you got to pause and still define them. Because a lot of people throw a lot of words around for years and realize at some point, I've never actually defined that or known what it's supposed to mean. I just use it a lot anyway. So what do we mean here? Here are the terms sexual orientation and sexual identity. I'll abbreviate them in the interest of space, SO and SI. What are they? Orientation simply refers to inclination, predilection, urge, desire, proclivity, romantic attraction, it can mean any and all those things. And then identity runs deeper. It has to do more clearly with who you are. And they will often combine it, a person's orientation with the person's gender identity to form what they will say is their sexual identity. But for all practical purposes, it seems clear to me now, just in ongoing discussions and paying attention to media articles and all this, that these two have been conflated so that really I think people now just suppose that orientation equals identity. Is that fair to say? Do you think that's largely the case? It's my impression anyway. So now when people talk about orientation, I think they have almost presumed as part of their meaning, as part of their definition of it, that it is your identity. So, now thinking about these terms, think with me now about a few, and there are just a few, standard categories, that is, standard orientations, which are typically abbreviated, made into an acronym, I should say. And you all know what those precious letters are that are used so often now, don't you? And they are what? There you go. Now, for simplicity's sake at first, I'm just going with the big four. Okay, I'm just going with the big four. And there's a couple of add-ons. We'll talk about, whatever those are. But I think these are the big four, the privileged four. We know these. Everybody knows these. You can't get very far outside your house or the internet without seeing it, hearing about it, people talking about it, hearing debates about it, discussing it, and so on. So these are the few, the proud. But let me, just so we know what they are, I think you know, but just to be clear, the L and the G are two sides of the same coin, right? They're just essentially, this is just homosexuality, whether it's male or female, there's the L and the G. The B is kind of tricky, it's sort of like both. The T, I'm not sure that's even an orientation. Although originally I think T was used as transsexual, now when I see it, it's almost always transgender when you see people spell it out. And transgender, I don't know if that's even an orientation. The straight, long ago, I think like in the 60s or the first time people ever began to ever use this kind of thing, they would put the S on it sometimes. But that's just assumed. And as I heard when I asked you a minute ago, there's often a Q stuff there now, which I've seen as queer or questioning. And I've started to see I tagging along too. LGBTI or QI or whatever. So intersex, I think, is what that usually is. And I don't know, stay tuned. They could grow. But stay tuned for right now, because it's about to grow by leaps and bounds. And just to prepare you for this, let me ask you this question. These are certainly orientations just by the definition I gave, which is to say, there certainly are people who feel these inclinations, are there not? We're in New Orleans, right? You wouldn't have to walk too far to find somebody who has all manner of desires or urges, right? More than just what's on this screen, right? More than just what's on the screen. How many more? Well, buckle up, kids. I'm going to get to a lot of them. Now, to say something about this, the idea for as I said, for a good, I don't know, a good 20 years, probably more, has been that orientation is identity, and because it is fixed. Fixed from the start and throughout. Cannot change, therefore should not change. Trying to change it is wrong-headed. Maybe dangerous to the person, bad science, psychologically damaging, maybe cruel and abusive, and certainly bigoted and hateful, and maybe some other negative things too, besides. So that has been the idea, has it not, for many years now? We've sort of been facing that as a presupposed notion in the culture that that's how this is. Now, I said a second ago, and I'll be reiterating this, that believe it or not, this doctrine, which we've lived with now for so long, may be starting to change on their side. I mean, the advocates who have been in this camp for so long, some of them are starting to defect and say, you know, I don't think I actually believe this anymore. I'll explain a little more toward the end here, but I think when we're out and about in the world, we still will face largely people who take this top paragraph for granted, I think. So let's think it through, because you know, from the start, something in the mind of, I mean, most people raised in a traditional Christian setting, they suspect there's something. There's certainly a number of things that are problematic here. You don't always know necessarily what or how to go about it, and obviously there's also the intimidation factor because, I mean, for crying out loud, are you ready? Are you really prepared for the firestorm, the fecal storm, we might say, that comes your way? Well, here's my list, and let me say a couple things about it. Now, I'm giving you fair warning. There's just no family-friendly way to proceed through this reasoning process without just facing head-on many things that you don't necessarily wake up in the morning and want to think that much about. But all of these would be things listed by the APA and other groups. They're all real things, that is to say, people. There are people for each of these. Now, they don't always list them like I have, because I'm trying to stick with the program here of coming up with a longer acronym. So I'm using the first letter of these, you see what I mean? And that's my thing. I'm not saying I do it. The APA doesn't do this necessarily. So I'm doing this for a point, because I want to show that, you know, we have the acronym is the way to do it, apparently. So I'm simply adding to the acronym. And each letter represents yet another orientation. I think you know what most of these are. I will not belabor them. Okay. No slide, no images. Okay, this is what this is, and you know what we're talking about here. And again, there would be people. Let me ask you. I'll ask you a question here. Are those things on that page not, are they not inclinations or desires or urges that some people would have? They are. Like it or not, whether we know people like this or not, people exist who have all of those urges and, in fact, end up doing all of those things. Do they feel them any less strongly? I think that people who do some of those things do them, they do them because they genuinely have some kind of desire, something in them wants that kind of gratification. And by the definition I gave in the beginning, that makes those things orientations. Again, we're just being definitional here. They're orientations. So, keep following me here. This is a disclaimer that's very important to make in a discussion about these matters. That is, would most LGBT advocates be against many of the things on that list? Probably most. Would they be against those things? Most of them would certainly be against those things. I've talked to a lot of people, and they're not for those things. Most of those things, they'd say, oh, that's terrible. Oh, I'm against that. I don't know. I wouldn't. And why is this important, by the way, to really, in fact, chances are in discussion, you're going to have to hit this point. You're going to have to reiterate this like a dozen times. Because for some reason, there's just a built-in knee-jerk tendency when you start to reason along these lines for the person you're talking with, if they represent kind of advocacy for, you know, gay rights. The tendency on their part is to immediately be offended and assume that you're either accusing them of one or more of those things, calling them some kind of wild, crazy, insane pervert, or you're at least saying, you like those things. You're for those things. So it's good to lay that aside. Set that to one side and get it out of your way. No, I don't think you're for those things. I take you at your word that you don't like most of those things, that you've got a real moral problem with most of those things, that you would not advocate for most of those things. And make it as clear as you can. And even then, they may come back a little bit later and act again as if you're accusing them of being for those. You've got to keep making this clear. No, I'm not saying that. That is not my point here. Keep your eye on the ball. Okay, that's not what we're saying. So they would be against most of those things. That is not the issue. Here is the issue. On what basis can just the privileged few orientations get to be on the stage, in the print, exalted, protected, celebrated, endorsed? Why do they get all that when the long list of letters gets left behind, cast out, forgotten? What about their rights? Now, I'm playing a little bit of, you know, this is devil's advocacy here, right? But it has a purpose. You already sense it, don't you? Your logic bone, right? You're going, okay, I smell what you're cooking here. Nevertheless, I want to lay it out for you in a little more formal way. Now, don't get scared. There's a lot of words. I normally would never put this many words on any slide, but I just have to. But just hang with me. I want to put this in a way that I hope is carefully and clearly done, to put it in what looks like the form of an argument, which I think we can walk through, and I hope that its purpose is clear enough and that it can accomplish its purpose. So, let's think it through. We've already talked about most of this. So, number one, this is premise number one. So, sexual orientation, calling it SO here, is defined by inclination or attraction. We got that. Okay? Sexual identity includes SO as an integral part. So, as we said in the beginning, orientation equals identity as far as it goes for most people. As such, number three, SI is inborn and intrinsic. This is part of who you are. It's a fundamental part of you. Therefore, cannot be changed. Number four is a moral premise. This is important. This is a moral premise. It's a key one. To fail to accept premise three, which is that this is inborn and intrinsic, to fail to accept that by attempting to alter somebody's, that's wrong. Should not do that. Now, so far, I think this is just straight up orthodoxy in our culture. Okay, so, but now let's move. Now, based on these disturbing, this long chain of other orientations, the ones that got left behind, they include but are not limited to all of those. Well, my previous slide, the long list of orientations that certain people have. Now, let's go back through. Now, the next four match up with the first four. So, look at premise six. Based on number one, all of those attractions represented in that long list in five, they're all orientations. Premise seven. Based on number two, all of those orientations that are represented in the long list, they're also the identities of people. They're integral to people. They are fundamentally part of who they are. Now to number eight. Going back to three, based on three, all of those identities expressed by all those attractions in the long list, they are all inborn and intrinsic parts of who they are, and they cannot be changed. And now our conclusion is the moral one that matches four. Remember, that was the moral premise. Here's this is a moral statement here. So based on number four, that it's wrong to try to change it. If we fail to accept number eight, which is that all those, all those in the long list, if we fail to accept that, we try to alter any one of them, that's wrong. You can't do it and you ought not do it. I mean, why try? And it might even be dangerous and you shouldn't do it. That sort of thing. Now, would most people, if you didn't build this argument and you just took the view that nine expresses, the conclusion there expresses, you just took it by itself without building to it, most advocates, again, would not agree with it. If you said to them, you know, all these things, all the disturbing ones, that we saw, all of them are fundamental parts of who all of those people are, and, we should never try to change them. Those people would say, oh, yes, we should. I mean, a bunch of those are wrong. We should try to change them. So they wouldn't agree with nine. But you see that, the reasoning here, I think this is sound. I think the logic, based on their prior reasoning, based on their orthodoxy, 1 through 4, I think 9, they must accept it. So now we have a problem, and this is a good discomfort. Like he said last night, this is a big stone in their shoe, and now they've got to work this out, right? Now they can't strut out in comfort. Now they've got to go, what about that? Now let's think, though, about a few possible objections to this. Okay, so let's see, they hang you so far, and you get to number 9, and you go, okay. What about all that long list of those things? Let's think about a few objections. Here are some. I put them in the form of questions. So first, hey, aren't some of those things on that long list illegal? Another one? Aren't some of the things on that list actually harm people? What about the harm principle? So here's another one. Some of the things on that list are not consensual. I mean, consent is an important principle here. And some of those do not require consent. That's bad. Okay. Another one? There's a bunch of the things on that list that are just frankly socially unacceptable. I mean, ask around, do a survey. I mean, everyone I know is against them, so what about that? They're not accepted, okay? And then finally, I don't see all those things listed as orientations. I mean, I read a lot. If you, go to the advocacy websites and blah, 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 and all this, and you won't see all those. No, I listed all of them, but they don't, so what about that? They don't list them, so there must be some too, right? All right, well, so let those sink in for a second. We're going to address each one, and I don't have the ability or probably even the time to put a bunch of the articles up here, but along the way, I'm going to mention, as we go look at these objections and what we might say to them, I'm going to mention several articles, things in the last at least few years that have been in the news, not all of which are, again, things that are cheery, happy, or friendly. But let's think about each of these, okay? Some of these things are illegal. Is that true, that some of those things on that long list are illegal? Is that true? Yeah, of course it is. Some of those things are illegal. Thank God, I'm glad of it. So they're right that some of these things are. Are all of them. A bunch of them are not illegal. And some of them are not illegal, that the opponent who was making this case would agree, they would still say, oh, that's bad and I'm against it. But it's not illegal. So even if we set the illegal ones aside, we have a problem. But something else, though. How fixed are the laws of the land, anyway? Do they not change? We've seen this in our time, have we not? I mean, it wasn't that long ago. There were a bunch of sodomy laws on the books and places. Just not too long ago at all, the Supreme Court got together and made a really big change. So laws can change. The fact that something's illegal, I'm just not sure how much that really matters to the greater philosophical point here. Yeah, it's illegal now. And by the way, there are people currently attempting to change laws in some ways that you might find unsavory. So, there's an article from the Telegraph about how in Germany, it's very possible that incest laws will soon be abolished. Because a government ethics committee there determined that incest is a fundamental right of adult sexual self-determination. All right, so there's that. There is also a teen, this was a USA Today story, who was planning to marry her long-lost biological father she had been reunited to. And they were trying to work that out in court. What's my point? Just to put you off dinner? No. My point is that not only can laws change, not only have we seen them change, according to some recent articles, a few of them are teetering now, you know. And the polygamists have their camp. And I'll mention this a little bit later, it's extremely disturbing, but those who advocate for child relations have their political advocates doing their work, too. No, I'm afraid that laws aren't necessarily a good thing to appeal to. The fact that it's illegal doesn't really help our case here. What about the fact that some of them cause harm to people? Is that true? Yes. Definitely some of them cause harm to people. But they don't all cause harm. Some of them are, you know, I mean, pardon me for saying so, but I mean, lawyers say, well, we may cause a little fear, but we don't actually harm people. Okay, some people who practice sort of free love, swinging and multiple partner and playing the field and so on, they say, we're not harming anyone. There may be some emotional pain and heartache to someone who feels jilted or cheated on, but hey, necrophiliacs say corpses feel nothing. Okay. Yes, I know. I see that look on your face. There was an example recently of a French woman, this was in the New York Post, who claimed that her desire was only for robots. Did you see that one? You're shaking your head. Yeah. I thought, okay, this is the onion, right? No, she's not attracted to real people, but robots. She had one made for her, and she claims to be engaged to it, and now awaits the legalization of human-robot marriage, and she identifies her orientation as, drumroll please, robosexual. Well. You heard it here. A young woman in the UK decided to marry herself. I know it's silly. I mean, come on. I don't even. But, okay, so harm, yes, some things cause harm, but not all. Sometimes it's difficult to know how much harm and what kind of harm. In other words, I don't think this is an adequate response to our argument either. You're still up against some things. What about consent? Some of the things in the list are non-consensual? Yes. Well, granted, in every case there are some of them that fit. But in no case do all of them fit. Please. plenty of the things on that list that I think most people you talk to would be against are consensual things. And yet they'd still be against them. So, how about socially unacceptable? Well, I mean, I hate to be glib about it, but who cares? I mean, that's the most transitory and fickle thing on this whole list. I mean, socially unacceptable. Most of you can remember when same-sex relationships were widely unacceptable. And that was like 5 minutes ago, practically, you know, in the greater scheme of things, right? Some of you are old enough that you can appreciate just the suddenness. I mean, the split second in which this has all changed. Young people sometimes can't because, you know, just sort of now it's the air they breathe, but if you're old enough, you're kind of like, man, this happened so fast, like my head still hurts. It's like, man, this flew by. What? Waking up in a world, bizarre world. I mean, it just happened really fast. So socially unacceptable, that means almost nothing. I'm not even sure that even needs a response. And then the last one, well, look, the experts rarely list all those. Well, this simply begs the question. Since the very challenge we posed is why they don't. You know, so this is circular to just say, because they don't. That's not an answer.
How would you know who were experts?
I mean, you might appeal to like the APA or some other psychological or psychiatric group, or I don't know. I'm sure they're, you know, I don't know all their names.
Everybody's an expert.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but even if they got some kind of credential, whether it's in the realm of I'm a sexual ethicist, that's more the philosophical realm, or in practice, you know, a clinician of some kind. I treat people with, you know, sexual problems. I don't know what. Whoever they might be, though, whether or not they list all those as orientations, that is the very thing we're talking about. So to simply say they don't, and that's that's question begging. We're here talking about why they don't and what basis they have for privileging four or five or six of them and pretending like all the rest of them don't even exist. I just need a good reason for that. Again, we're back to one of those questions you mentioned, right? What's your reason for only having these and not these? Well, some of them are illegal. We've already talked about that. Some of them aren't. So what? That changes. Will you include them if the law changes? You know, some of them don't involve consent. You know, we've already gone through all that. So I don't know. I don't know how or why. And I mean, I say this sort of toward as the last one of these to deal with in terms of these different ones. But by the way, I just have to tell you also about this one. This is a real dandy here. And by the way, before I mention even that, do you know though that some people, just for the record, there are some voices in the culture who actually are saying, they are saying widen the acronym. So a few people are actually saying it. So, as an example of that, an article in the Chronicle of Higher Education, it was a blog there, revealed how some progressive campuses are opening the door to many more possibilities. The writer of that talked about the ever-widening acronym to, and they had an acronym, LGBTQQ2IA. And another campus used the acronym for the word quilt bag, and each of those stand for something, and described how, they said there are a number of orientations, and then they added the phrase or something else. They sort of seized on that, or something else. Well, or something else really blows the hatch open. Or something else, that's vague. Come on in, boys. Door's open. So, you know, again, that's a Chronicle of Higher Education. There was a recent article in Slate about how those who call themselves kinky sexuals, they say that kink is is a legitimate orientation, and they want it recognized and granted the right and dignity of being listed and called a sexual orientation. They're making their case for it. But again, most disturbing of all, maybe, but we can't just look away from it. So I'm giving you a trigger warning on this. But anyway, most disturbing of all is those who are attracted to children. There's a group called Before You Dash Act, B and the number 4 and the U Dash Act. It described itself, this is the quote. Quote, a Maryland-based group of mental health professionals, psychiatrists, and pedophiles, their word, who seek to normalize pedophilia. They would like the word pedophilia, though, to be replaced because it's pejorative. Also, the words deviant and pervert should be ceased to be used. They would like to be recognized by what they deem as their sexual orientation, which is, its acronym is MAPS, M-A-P-S, which stands for Minor Attracted Persons. Minor Attracted Persons. Yes, they do have advocates. I mean, look, I feel like I have to keep over apologizing because I see grimaces, okay, on your faces because you're like, I came not to hear this. This is this is ugly. But you know what? It's real.
The possibility of that change has to be put in context. When I was a college student, widespread acceptance of homosexuality, and especially gay marriage, was absolutely unthinkable because it was illegal, it was known to cause harm, and it was socially unacceptable. And might be non-consensual. You go back a few more decades, and it wasn't even listed as an orientation. That's before I was born. Not that old. But it's something that was absolutely unthinkable. In my lifetime as an adult, it could become as widely approved as it is, that it's possible for some college students today who grew up to have these things become widely accepted. And on the same principles, exactly the same principles.
No doubt. That's a little bit of the alarm we want to sound. Now, even in their minds, just show them that if you don't like those things in that long list, if you've got a problem with those, if you would not want to see those normalized, and if you think they're problematic, guess who has paved the way? Guess who greased the alley? You know, it's like in curling. You know those guys run along with the broom? You get the picture? you've swept this alleyway clean so that these other, I mean, certainly, you know, and I don't know if this is the next slide, but I will mention this in a second about, it is here, I want to say, and this is the second one of those. I'll do the second one first, just since I'm on that point now. Sometimes if you're talking about this, someone will say this. Oh, here we go with that slippery slope fallacy again. You ever heard that one? You guys and your slippery slope argument. It's a fallacy. Well, there is such a thing as a slippery slope fallacy. No doubt about it. But there's also just a slippery slope argument. And furthermore, there's more than one kind. What I have laid out here is not really a slippery slope argument in the sense it's usually meant, because in the sense that it's usually meant is that it is more predictive in nature. And, you know, I'm not a prophet nor the son of a prophet. I've been called the son of the sun stuff before, but not that. And, you know, even though what Tom says is right in that we're not unreasonable to predict the possibilities of these things. I mean, we have good reasons for supposing this very well could happen. My main argument that I just laid out here is not even that, though. I'm not standing here saying, I guarantee you, I'm making a prediction right now that this is going to happen. No, I don't know. But it very well could. But the form of this argument is more of what you might call a logical slippery slope. And it's also a little bit like a reductio. I'm just taking their logic as it's been the received doctrinal, you know, platform and the logic that they've been using for these years, and I'm just going down the road with it and saying, what does it entail? And if it entails things you don't like, that's on you. It's your argument. You know, I never liked it to begin with, partly because of what it entails. And so if you don't like where it goes, you know, that ugly baby's your ugly baby. You know what I mean? And you just want them to see that, because then, you know, maybe that give you pause enough to go, wait a minute. You know, there is a problem here, and maybe I should rethink this. And I didn't say that the thing that thing up top there, I did say it in not so many words, but it's worth saying that even with the ideas of something being illegal, something, in any case, regardless of how many things are harmful or not, by the argument, by the logic of the argument, necessarily, it would still be the case that those things are parts of those people's identities and can't change, regardless. You know, even if they're illegal, the logic stands. Now, just that, so, but the final disclaimer, and then we'll see if there's what you have to say more about this in terms of just thinking it through and questions. And I can, by the way, go back. Sometimes people say, I've done this before, and they say, go back to that slide of that argument. I kind of see that again. I can do that. Just let me say one more thing here, and I think I've been on the slide. I mentioned up front that even though this has been the thing we've been dealing with for years and years, that we need to be able to kind of respond to and talk about. Lo and behold, don't look now, but some people are actually moving off of it and changing their minds. And so, this is fairly recent here. Here's Dr. Lisa Diamond, top researcher of the APA, and also I think it says she's one of the co-editors of everything you do. Avowed lesbian activist, she's described as, saying, quote, "The battle to disprove born that way and can't change is now over." I'm sorry, this is someone writing about her. This is not her. These are her words. And she is telling LGBT activists to stop promoting the myth. What this means in plain English is what many of us have known all along. Sexual desire, I cut and paste that, so that's not my screw up, is fluid. Talk about editing, huh? This article, I cut and paste it. Is fluid. Homosexual desire is not hardwired, and born that way and can't change is a myth. This is coming from them. And by the way, if you can go to YouTube, and this Dr. Lisa Diamond, she's got videos where she's presenting this on YouTube, and she's very bluntly just saying, hey, stop saying this stuff. And she's speaking to her crowd, and she's talking to the LGBT kind of advocates and people that are on the march, and she's saying, we need to get off that argument and not do that anymore. That's not the case. It's fluid. It can change. It can go this way, that way. We shouldn't keep doing that.
Question: Why is she doing that? Sounds like it undercuts her argument or their argument.
Right. Good question. Yeah, he's asking why. Why would she do a thing like that? Her claim is that she's saying it's science. She's saying that the increasing number of people who basically say that, and the increasing number of people who are kind of saying, I'm fluid. And how about this too? Think with me about what's happened in the last maybe 3 years on the gender question. And I don't know if this is true or not. I'm just kind of speculating here, just watching and speculating. But I think that now since you know, we talked for a long time about orientation and people's sexual lives, and that was a thing. And then that sort of faded, and gender came to the forefront, right? So for the last few years, it seems like gender has been a bigger issue even than that. And in the gender debate, it's become definitely an issue of it's fluid. It's fluid. I mean, it's like, and I almost wonder if the emphasis on fluidity in that realm has kind of like back-filtered into the discussion about orientation, so that now people go, well, you know what? In other words, it's almost like it's all the rage to be fluid anyway. So why now, if that's true, what does that tell us, though? It makes me think this is more of just a trendy social thing than it is biological or something. You know what I mean?
You know, I think I might have answered. I might be able to answer my own question.
Yeah, help us all by doing so, huh?
The Obergefell decision was based on liberty.
Uh-huh.
And whether you're, the question was whether are you free to marry opposite sex or marry same sex, et cetera, et cetera. And so I guess what she's saying is we don't have to argue that we're hardwired anymore. We've got this liberty interest protection. And therefore, we can simply say, regardless of whether you're hardwired, we can still retain this liberty right interest, even though we're not hardwired. In other words, we're free to be bisexual. I guess that's what you're saying.
That is a good, yeah.
Once you go so far, it's no longer required. Like, you had to get to where they are now. You don't have to do that anymore.
It was an argument for convenience.
Exactly. It's convenient, so it can go away.
Now it's not necessary.
And also, it leaves room for more to go their way.
Sexuality.
When fluid's just such a pretty way of putting a bow on all of that.
Right. Yeah.
Like, it's like, talk about addiction, like pro-life or pro-choice, whatever you want to say, like, that is a beautiful word. Say, just being natural. It's just like water flowing.
That's a great, you know what? That's a great point. The use of the language is, you always have to pay attention. It's so often, things, you know, people are wise, like foxes, you know, they know what they're doing, and you're right. What is it? Fluidity. Why, it sounds like a lovely creek in the springtime. You know, it evokes all these positive kind of imagery. That's a really good point. They call these philosophers called rhetorical definitions and rhetorical explanations. It's not only that in the case of some of these things. It's like it's rhetorical and it serves me, you know. But usually they're meant to serve you. And you know, we've seen this in the media. I mean, what's the young celebrity? Which one was it? Who came out and said my orientation is pansexual?
Oh, Miley Cyrus.
Right. And what is that but just a one big old giant super blanket? It's the orientation blank check. It's like, I'm whatever I want to be today, tomorrow, and otherwise. This is just like a weird kind of Pandora's box of every man does what is right in his own eyes Tuesday, you know, and then Wednesday a different thing. I mean, how much, and I've heard a lot of commentators like Mulder say this repeatedly, that there is one form of liberty in our day that trumps all others, and this is it. This is the freedom you dare not trample over. And we want such freedom here that's like the freedom to leap tall buildings. I mean, we want uber, ultra, mega liberty here in this domain so that a person can do and be whatever that person wants at any given time, all parameters off. It's really a march straight on back into Sodom or into the caves or, I don't know, into the barnyard. I mean, I'm not sure how to describe it, but if that's where it's going, and you know, to the point as well, I'm glad you brought that up about the idea that when you say, look, this is a well-oiled machine and a purposeful movement going way back. You want more on that? Just talk to the guy in the corner there. He's got the right. And the other day, right? You went through the background. This didn't come out of a vacuum, and this wasn't done in a corner. These guys were organizing early on. With how many points was it they had? Like, here's how you win the culture. They were like,
well, in the one article, the overhauling of straight America, there were six points. They had another list of five subpoints too, I think. But it was things like make gay look normal, make them look like victims, make the victimizers look awful.
Yeah, have good characters on TV that are positive. It was so prophetic. I mean, you read the list and you're like, check, check, yep, this happened, yep, that happened, yep.
Yeah.
They had goals, and they met them all. But having reached their finish line, though,
all the way to the Supreme Court, and then victory, and the White House is bathed in the rainbow, and it's like, yee-haw, we win. But you see, think about the mercenary element of your reasoning if it's just instrumental only, and if it's just a gun for hire to get you what you want. And it's interesting because I mentioned this the other over there. I was talking to Kokel, who spoke this morning. He's got a guy on his staff who has been on that Stand to Reason staff. They got a guy who I think they've been sending just to learn. He's going to meetings, like he's focusing on this, and he's going to meetings with the therapist, and he's learning what they're saying, and he is saying what this article says. He's saying more and more and more they're saying this is just this isn't even fixed. And furthermore, what they're noticing is that the political advocates, many of which are, by the way, not even gay, they're just like really progressive people, you know, who want to push it. But he said, you know what they're doing? They're using either argument, given the context and the audience, and whichever one serves them best. And his exact words were, their movement has no integrity. Like, I mean, just in terms of making arguments, and they have no integrity. For this crowd, I'm going to go back to the orthodoxy of fixed, because that works here, or this serves me here. But then over here, I'm going to flip it, and I'm going to say, it's fluid. And they're just going to just throw the law of non-contradiction right out the window and just live absolutely self-contradictory policies here because it serves their needs.
Is landing more in the fluidity camp, isn't that still maybe potentially a better conversation from us, because we're saying what is fluid, and we're also saying that especially through the power of Jesus, but just through life, that means that this, you can make the healthy
yes.
choice to flow back to the more healthy
yes.
side of the stream. Does that make sense?
It ought to. Mm-hmm. Now, let's be real for a second. Does anyone here suppose that right now, as things stand, even with the move that's starting to move toward the whole thing about it's fluid, does anyone here think that the advocates are ready to go ahead and change their view and backtrack and say, I'm sorry, all of you people who for years were talking about gay conversion therapy, that's what they call it. I don't know if that's the right term for it, but they use that. We're sorry. It looks like people can change. Please forgive us for all those rotten, nasty, terrible things we've been saying about you. Anyone ready for that one? Anyone waiting on pins and needles? No? Again, Yuri, logically speaking, and by the force of love, you are exactly right. This new turn ought to just, we ought to be done with all that, all the vilification of everybody who wants to counsel people who struggle with the same sex or other things. We ought to be done with all that. If it's fluid, then it's fluid every direction. And any minister ought to be able to just say, like, I like how you put it. You know, I believe you ought to flow back this way. And who is someone else to say, that's wrong, you can't do that? It's like this is a sieve that allows you want to flow one direction only, you can't flow back, you know? But why is that? You know, California passed a law where ministers can't even... I don't know if they passed it, actually. I'm not sure if it made it or not. Someone here may know. They were working on a law that was going to forbid ministers from counseling people on sexual struggles about it. In other words, it's malpractice. You're only allowed to go to an official, you know, therapist. I mean, nurse, ministers can't do it. This was up for, again, but maybe someone can Google or research it or whatever, we can look into it, but this is only a few weeks ago that I read this, and I don't know where it went. But, they were, now, think about that, and especially if we're going to end up coming to a position in which this all is just fluid and completely unfixed like this, what reason could you have for bringing down the law like that and telling ministers, singling them out? It's almost as if you're saying, anybody anywhere is perfectly free to switch, change, move, flow, or counsel others to switch, change, move, flow, except this one. you can never flow back to heterosexual, traditional sexual preference. You may not flow that way. That is forbidden. That's the one. That's the tree from which you may not eat. You can't flow there, nor can you counsel anyone to flow there. Any other way, it's like, take every fork in the road every way. Not there. To me, if that's not just some kind of bizarre Christophobia, where you just hate this one thing. I mean, does anyone have any good reason why that would be?
Let me go back to your argument. You don't have to put it up there, but I think we kind of should have understood, and you're kind of a dummy if you didn't, that that's where it was going to go.
Yeah.
Because once you take out the objective morals and you take out the moral giver from somewhere, then there aren't any morals, and you can't claim that any of those things are wrong. I mean,
right.
And really, there wasn't any T in the beginning either. It was just, I kind of thought that multi-partner thing would have been first with the multiple wives or multiple husbands or whatever.
I kind of thought
that would be
right.
First. But.
Right. And they are working there. They are trying to work the channels too. And incidentally, you're exactly right. I mean, but when you say you had to be a dummy, look, there's no genius in this argument. This is just pretty obvious stuff. There's no,
yeah.
And by the same token, the Obergefell decision, if we're going to blow it up, if we're just blowing up the whole idea of marriage and it becomes fluid itself, and we've decided gender doesn't matter now, tell me, pray tell, why does number matter?
Yeah.
Again, this is just simple reductio kind of reasoning. I don't know how you build. You respond to that?
Because my encounter was, I had to say out loud where I stood,
right.
If that makes sense, on the issue. When it happened, I guess someone made the statement, you don't accept the issue or you don't deal with the issue until it's in your home or until it's, that close to you. That being said, my God brother, been known for years. That was my response to him. From then, he's like, wow, you didn't tear me down. You didn't, talk bad about me. You didn't shut me out. At least you just heard me out. And I think, like you said, just listen to me enough. But you didn't, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, just to echo that, too. Like the rapist, it feels really good to the rapist. Like, that is the whole water. But also,
right.
I think what you were saying, too. Like, I had a student. I teach guitar lessons. And I had a student that came in, had a terrible day, clearly. So, like, hey, how's your day going? And she said that she got cheated on. And I was like, oh, wow, that's horrible. What happened? She was from her girlfriend. And she hadn't told her parents yet.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And I'm like, okay. And I didn't take that 30-minute guitar lesson to unpack this argument. I unpacked the fact that no one should treat you that way.
Yeah.
Because you're a person and you're beautiful. Like, those are the things that build those relationships.
Sure.
Like, so never forget the fact that it's a person.
Yeah.
We're talking about.
Some Christians, and even though this wasn't our subject, I mean, we probably can reiterate it, given that it's important enough. There are some Christians, most of us raised up in it, so there are some Christians who even now kind of think that this is the unpardonable sin, the unforgivable sin. We sort of have to teach people the truth here, and look, you could ask most Christians, you know anybody cheated on their spouse? You know anybody like that? Ran around, did a little bit. No, you do. Did you shun them forever and bar them from your life and tell them they may not ever come back and don't ever darken my door and you're not allowed in my church? Well, did you do that to them? Probably not. Maybe a few people did, but probably not. I know people all around me and people who know people all around me who have done that kind of stuff. Some of them are ministers. Hello. Why didn't you? Oh, I just didn't. But someone turns up and says they're gay. That's different. Is it gayness as some kind of distinct, isolated thing like, oh, you can get by with anything you want. Not that. It's like, it's not always honest, and some preachers find it easy to just rail against gayness, but they haven't mentioned divorce in a decade. But that's what's ripping their church up. And that's what that's the dysfunction that's running wild in their group, but they never talk about that.